Arabs podcast. This is Alia.
This is Nadia.
And we have a guest back on. I'll let you introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Bijan Agha. I'm a Persian American and I am a comics creator.
Yeah. And I think it was exactly a year ago that that you were on. And yeah, so it's good to have you back. I'd love to hear, what's been going on for the last year for you and, you know, the comic that you're about to launch. Do you want to start with that?
Sure. So we've been working on a series of comics. The first one that we did was called Time Wars, The Adventures of Cobra Olympus. And that was about a trans Muslim superheroine who was able to fight monsters using her wits and messages from the future. And so now we've got a new group of superheroes with a new comic. They're called the Legendary X-Knights. They're from a totally different era. They're from hundreds of years in our future. And they are also getting messages from the future, from even deeper in their own future. And in the first one, I wanted to focus on a world that already exists, our own world, and how we navigate it. So that's why Cobra Olympus is set in our own time period. But with the new Legendary X-Knights, I got the opportunity to explore a new era where gender and sexuality and politics have all evolved into new forms. So all the characters are queer. They're all totally different ages. They're all from totally different backgrounds. And they're being given powers that are hard to understand, but that work through their emotions. And usually through emotions that people associate with negativity, like fear and anger. So I wanted to tell a story about superheroes who had to face the deepest, darkest parts of them and come together as strangers and win the situation as a family.
So cool. So would you describe that as like a more like a utopian future or utopic?
Well, the idea is that the people are now more advanced, but that we still face the same problems in terms of power and powers and systems of powers and structures and governments. Gotcha. So one of the things that they're fighting against is a conspiracy to use the military industrial complex. So the first thing they start having to do is go up against the U.S. military industrial complex.
Ooh. Okay, so the military has stuck around.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You could envision a future where like the general public has shifted and that public shift doesn't immediately translate into like systemic changes because people don't actually have that much control over it.
Right. And we're already seeing it. We're so much more advanced as a people than we were, 100 years ago. We have new terminology, we have new language to talk about ourselves, we have new therapies and new ways to treat our different experiences. And yet the systems of power still totally exclude queer people from almost every level of power. The only people who seem to be able to gain even a shred of power are usually cis, white, gay men. And strictly gay. Yeah, even a hint of bisexuality is still very much frowned upon within systems of power. And yet it's becoming more normal among younger people. Younger people are reporting a higher rate of being queer than any generation before. And I think it's just like that left-handed graph. As soon as they stopped trying to stop people from being left-handed, all of a sudden the number of left-handed people shot right up. Not because people were actually becoming left-handed, but because people stopped trying to suppress their
right.
Totally. I mean, that just makes me think, I don't work with kids so much right now, but I've spent a lot of time like teaching dance in public schools. So I'm kind of interfacing with the school system as like a little bit of an outsider in each school. And also just like navigating being like a queer and genderqueer person in that context. It's so interesting because like kids are there's never an actual issue with children around queerness, especially young children. They are so used to learning new things every day that if you just teach them that there's like a new perspective on gender or relationships that they haven't heard of, Like, they also just learned like three new shapes that day. Like, they're not that surprised to learn a new thing. Like, they just learned about trapezoids. They didn't know about trapezoids either. But it's the issue is what adults and maybe some broader system that adults are appealing to, what they think is appropriate for children. And it's almost like it's like that fear, the fear that there is latently a lot more queerness and general like diversity of expression in the population if it's just left to do its thing, then something is ready for. And I don't know what the something is, but there's a fear of it for sure.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I was 9 and one of my good friends brought me to her house and she was like, oh, this is my mom and this is also my mom. And at the time, I remember being like, oh, sweet. You know, like, it did not faze me at all. And then my own caregiver, like, some of my own caregivers later were like, oh, that is appalling, blah, blah, blah. And then as a kid, you look up to your caregivers and you think, like, you know, I depend on them. I need to think like them. And that was the problem. Like, inherently, there was nothing, like, negative going on within me. So, yeah, it's very unnatural what we are told.
I remember when I was a kid, I saw on the news that there was a news thing about, can women love women as much as a woman loves a man? And then I remember bringing it up as a little, I had to have been in like third grade. I brought it up to one of my compatriots and I was like, did you know about this? And they just gave me this withering look, like I was the biggest fool on the planet. I might as well have had pie on my face. And they're like, of course, it's called being a lesbian. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm the dummy here. Like, everyone knows this but me, apparently. Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons I'm so excited to work in a medium that's family friendly. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of comics that are really bloody and gory. There's also a lot of comics that are just aimed at little kids. And I wanted to do something that was, I think that comics have done for really well for a really long time, which is tell stories that are compelling for adults, but that are technically appropriate for children, so that when an adult reads it, they get something out of it. And when a child reads it, they're actually stretched and pushed further into understanding more sophisticated literature. So, and I think my greatest inspiration for that would have to be Wonder Woman from the 1940s, because Wonder Woman, the original run of Wonder Woman, she's not fighting mythical beings and she's not like, you know, engaging with supervillains. She's punching Nazis in the face. And so for a kid, it was a thrilling story about a bad guy doing something wrong and then getting his comeuppance. But for an adult, it was saying, look at what's happening in our country right now. Look at what's happening with the American Nazi Party and how it's affecting our people. So a child could certainly absolutely understand that there's a line between right and wrong being drawn here, mm-hmm. and that the Nazis are on the wrong side. And an adult was challenged to understand how this fit into their understanding of what America is at the moment.
Mm-hmm. I love that. It's like putting a mirror in front of an adult and being like, see what you've been brainwashed to think is acceptable. And like, they have to read something that's kind of through a child's eyes in a way. So,
yeah. I guess, can you talk a little bit about kind of how you're doing that in your own work? Like, what either social or political references there are that, even though they're in the future world, they're like remnants of our world, that you think maybe children might grasp on a certain level, and then adults are going to grasp on like a little bit of a deeper or more pointed level?
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely. We've always talked a little bit about the military industrial complex, but
yeah, exactly. And that's a huge part of what I'm writing about. So the idea is that the time wars are an ongoing war throughout history between groups of time traveling humans and groups of time traveling vampires. And their history has been so interwoven over the years that they can't just go back and, you know, stone Adam to death and just be done with it. They actually need each other at certain points of history. So this act of coming back in time and recruiting people to the cause creates an even more sophisticated web of interactions. So when Cobra Olympus is being given messages from the future to go stop a heist of blood, it's not just because the vampires are going to get the blood. It's because that shipment is going to go power some other thing in some other place, which is going to have a domino effect on the power structures there, who's in charge, and how they're conducting business. So the vampires become a metaphor for the corruption and the evil inside our systems. And their goal is not to simply, you know, wipe out, you know, humanity. Within the story of Time Wars, the idea is that Vlad the Impaler was the first vampire to attempt to truly rule as a vampire, and it didn't work because humans are too organized. So instead, the vampires learned to coordinate and manipulate humans to create war and strife, poverty, bigotry, so that there would always be people on the edges of society that they could prey on. And so the power of the Time Wars is to go through history and make it so that no one is at the edges of society. That's what the human time travelers are trying to accomplish. So in this story, the idea is that there's a very powerful artifact that's been hidden by the vampires. And the vampires don't know the power they have because they're incurious beings. They're not scientists. They're not explorers. They're parasites. So there's this device that's being hidden deep inside a vampire stronghold. And the people from the future are coordinating these three strangers to go in and get this device and unlock new powers. And if I said any more, I'd be giving away the comic.
Yeah. Huh. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more about like the emotional aspect of the powers? I thought it was really interesting that you said they are connected to emotions that we generally think of as negative. I think a lot of people talk about like the power of positive thinking and positivity, blah, 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 which, you know, that it has, there's something to it, but,
you're
looking at the other side of that.
So one of the things is I love the idea of color-coded characters, you know, like, for example, the Green Lanterns I always found interesting. However, I felt the Green Lanterns and the other lanterns in the core lacked continuity. Like the things that they were supposed to represent didn't really seem to be equal in measure in terms of how they affected a human. You know, fear plays a much smaller role in our day-to-day lives than does empathy, for example. And courage we need a lot of in short bursts, but it's not something we necessarily use on a day-to-day basis, you know, the same way we would empathy, like with just our normal people we live with and stuff. So I liked that idea, but I wanted to do a different spectrum. So the idea is that these powers are each associated with a color, and each color is also associated with an elemental power and a negative emotion. And a negative in human terms, in terms of our social relationships, because the idea is that there are a lot of things that we feel and it makes us not feel good to experience them, but it does make us better people and equips us to navigate the world. And the first and big example I'll give is that red is the color associated with control over fire and is also the power associated with anger. Yeah. So someone with this ability needs to focus on and feel, truly allow themselves to feel the anger that they have in themselves in order to use this power to its full extent, because anger is not just something we feel when something bad happens. It's something we feel when something needs to be done, when there needs to be some sort of action taken in order to make especially justice in the world. We often feel anger at injustice. And so anger at being wronged, anger at other people being wronged, anger at systemic issues, those can be channeled into something powerful and something constructive, something that can save the day. So that was my thinking.
Yeah, that's what propels us to do anything that's outside of how things are right now. And anger and hope are very intertwined, and I think they're kind of sometimes seen as opposites, but they're actually like,
they mean you give a fuck and you're not totally pathetic about
exactly
everything. yeah This is a little bit of a tangent, but I don't know, I've been thinking a lot about how guilt gets such a bad rap. Like I feel like there's so much anti-guilt sentiment. And I think there's like a lack of distinction between like guilt around things that shouldn't be moralized at all. Like, oh, you shouldn't feel guilt for like sexual desire or something like that, versus guilt around things that are on some level of a moral thing. Like, oh, you maybe should feel some level of, or if you feel some level of guilt about, you know, participating in things that are systemically bad or buying from a shitty corporation, maybe it's not the most productive thing to beat yourself up about it, sure, but maybe sit with those feelings for a second and then decide if there's you know, another path that's more aligned with your values, instead of like automatic, like, I don't know, there's a certain kind of like,
no, I don't, I totally get culture. It
yeah, that's yeah. So about validating everything instead of just sitting with, maybe you should make a change.
I think that was a huge turning point for me as a young person, was I felt really guilty about something I did, and I realized in a flash that I wasn't busy feeling guilty. I had consumed myself with feeling angry about the fact that I had become someone who felt guilty. So I wasn't even just feeling the guilt. I resented the situation for making me feel guilty, when really it was my own fault. I had done it. I did the thing. So I should just sit there and feel guilty. And that was the correct thing to do.
Yeah.
I mean, guilt and can cause changed actions. Anger can cause just taking action in general against the thing making you angry. I think there's a watered down, I don't want to say therapy culture, because I don't think it's exactly therapy. I think it's like some therapy concepts that have been watered down a little bit, but about always trying to feel better. And sometimes feeling better isn't the thing. Like, sometimes that's only a short-term thing, and what's going to make you feel better long-term is changing your actions or changing the world we live in so that more people can have the ability to feel better.
Right. And one thing about moving through this world and getting older is you learn, like, the goal isn't to be happy. Like, none of us can be happy 24/7. We have to feel all these other things too, to be human and to like enact change and to just make anything at all happen. If we were always happy, like, we would just sit around and let things happen the way they're currently happening. So yeah, I really like this, not polarizing, you know, not looking at emotions as a like good versus bad, because they all have their functions and their necessities.
I think it also helped me crystallize the idea that they were they're up against something systemic, because from a drama perspective, it's very easy to make everything interpersonal. And so I wanted that to be the source of the good emotions, when they build on each other, when they support each other, when they learn about each other. But making sure that I could direct their negative emotions towards an opponent, that's when there's these moments where they're in battle. And in order to be more effective in battle, they have to sit there and think about all the ways the system has negatively affected them. So we get to watch them fight and use these amazing powers and martial arts at the same time as they are telling us in what ways they've been affected by these systems.
Right. This is so important. I mean, particularly with, you know, what's happening in Palestine, I think, like, there's been a lot of, I'm sure you're both seeing this too, a lot of like, you know, give yourself a break, like take a break from consuming yourself or, you know, engaging too much in social media. And okay, fine, whatever balance, like, I know burnout is not productive, but also like, I also can't stand this like, oh, don't, you know, don't feel this thing all the time. Like, why not? Why shouldn't we be feeling the way we're feeling?
Yeah, I don't think it's not even just about Palestine. I've seen it also around, like, kind of people who have feelings about the elections or other protest movements as well. And it's not that it's a wrong impulse. Like, I do take breaks from things sometimes, but sometimes the like intensity to which that is emphasized, when maybe like, yeah. I don't know, let's say I wasn't talking about being burnt out at all. I was just saying like, these are some things that I'm doing. These are some things you can do.
Right.
Just having an action oriented conversation. And I think the speed by which some people feel need to come in and talk about rest and feeling better. And by all means, if you need to do that, please go do it. But sometimes there seems to be a level of like insecurity or need to like stop action.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I'm making a comic and not an essay, you know, like that's why,
yeah.
I mean, I think right now we have a lot of people making essays and that's amazing. You know, we definitely need that. You know, there's no one cure for everything. We need a whole range of options. And what I wasn't seeing was a lot of options for fun, entertaining action adventure media that mm-hmm. also sparks thought and is built on a foundation of philosophy. So,
right.
I mean, when you look back at the history of comics, that's their bread and butter. You know, Superman is saying we can be better people. Wonder Woman is saying we can be better Americans. Batman is saying we can be better people with privilege. So mm-hmm. the whole idea of superheroes is telling people that, you know, showing using something exciting, fun, and interesting to show people that the future can be better if we embrace these ideals, if we solve problems these ways. I think that's why the comic book industry suffered so much in the 80s and then into the 90s is because they sort of gave up on these ideals and they sort of got self-interested, you know, navel-gazy at well, violence begets violence, so let's just make it all violent. And you got these, you know, instead of superheroes, you know, knocking the guy down, now we're shooting them in the head. And it was only really appealed to edgelords. And I'd really like to get us, I think there's a lot of other people who are doing this too. We're seeing some, I think one of the ones that really stood out to me recently was Moon Girl and the X-Men. It's a beautiful comic that's coming out. And I feel like we need more things like that, that are uplifting and inspiring. I just think that the mainstream media is not going to offer us things that are the most interesting in terms of philosophy. So I want to try and join that movement of making things that are, positive to encounter, to consume, to talk about, to enjoy, but at the same time are keeping you engaged with what's really happening and in communicating ideas about how we can actually be a better group of people on this earth.
I love that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think that's really important to have that in the mix. Has comics always been your medium, or have you worked in other mediums as well?
I'm a hyper nerd. So by the time I was like 8 years old, I had already designed 2 board games and written a computer program and made a couple of comics and written a book. They were all terrible, all horrible. But I have basically been making all kinds of media ever since I was very small. And so, you know, roughly a year ago, I came out with Cobra Olympus. It was nowhere near the first comic book I wrote. It was just the first comic book I wrote that was fit to see the light of day.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's like everything was leading up to that in a way. Are you still in Uruguay?
Yes, I am.
Awesome.
And yeah.
Cool.
Well, it might be a little less awesome depending on how the election goes. Because, like the rest of the world, we have some pretty left and some pretty right choices. And like the United States was recently, it was pretty much a coin toss. The only real difference is that here the conservatives are the incumbent party, although there's no incumbent presidential candidate. So hopefully the international antagonism towards incumbents will favor the leftist party.
Oh, God, I hope so.
Yeah. Fingers crossed for y'all over there.
Yeah, for sure. And my understanding is Uruguay is a place where one can like be an artist full time, and it's feasible, right? Or is that? I mean, I don't know if that's oversimplification, but
no. I mean, there's definitely a strong. Well, so one of the main things is that there's very little in terms of natural resources to export.
Yeah.
So Uruguay has, for a very long time, relied on exporting culture. So Uruguay has some of the most amazing bands and fashion designers and filmmakers So the region, you know, the region is, you know, it's like Canada. We're very disproportionately likely to produce an artist relative to anyone else in any other profession. You know, I always said, if you wanted to be an artist, be born in Canada. It's amazing. but Uruguay's not bad either. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that, even though we have the potential to have a right-wing president, the legislature has really strongly been on the left wing for a very long time. And there's been a lot of strong investment into the arts and education. And it's very wise spending in terms of investing in the one industry that's really providing dividends, which is entertainment.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I have been to Uruguay once in my life, and I remember just walking around in Montevideo and seeing standalone artist studios where someone was in there working. And I was just like, the fact that someone can rent this space and be there all day, it just felt like such a novelty, unfortunately. But yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah, I've been meaning to get into Uruguayan cinema. It's just hard to do without a DVD player, because a lot of it gets released on home video. And then, I don't have a DVD player. And then and it's like, yeah, so I don't know what to do. But I am looking into getting an Uruguayan specific streaming service. So hopefully be able to start. I'm really hoping, because most streaming services allow a lot of different subtitles. So I'm really hoping for English subtitles.
Good. Yeah, I hope so too. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. How can people, I guess, support the new comic, and where can they watch out for it?
Sure. So, if you want to go to Patreon, so we have Patreon. That's where our studio gets its funding. And this is where we get the money to be able to put these things out in the first place. Awesome. So that's patreon.com/JamSheedStudios. JamSheed. And then we also have the Kickstarter. So you can go to kickstarter.com and search for Legendary X Knights. Knights as in warriors, not as in the opposite of day. And there you can, you will have a preview of the comic. So you can read the first couple of pages for free. We have lots of different backing options, all the way from $2 e-comic all the way up to a big deluxe package. Everyone who pledges for a digital comic before the 20th will get it emailed to them before the 25th at their Kickstarter email address. And one of my favorite things is, for the first time, we had a couple of these Kickstarters, but for the first time, we now have the option for people to buy at a discounted price a copy of the comic for a U.S. prisoner who has specifically requested queer literature.
Sick. So,
amazing.
Wait, can we talk a little bit about how that whole thing was set up? What was the process of making that happen?
Oh, well, it was actually very simple, because there's already, it's called Queer Books for Prisoners. It's a nonprofit that already exists. It's run by Sasha Feather. I found them on Blue Sky. And it's just a P.O. box. Anyone who wants to send any queer literature, we can share the P.O. box below. I don't have it on hand. Okay. Anyone who wants to send queer literature, it will be sent to a prisoner who has specifically requested queer literature through this program. And they're doing a great job of reaching out to prisons all over the United States, state penitentiaries, jails, federal prisons. So and it's not gendered. It's there's no vetting process. They don't need to be queer themselves. They just need to have asked for the literature.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. That's really good to know that that organization is there.
But so sorry, I interrupted you. You're talking about the Patreon and how people can.
Oh yeah, I know that caught my attention too, though.
Oh well, I mean that was a big closing point. The Kickstarter, we have a lot of different options. Where there'll be things like T-shirts and posters, but one of the options will be that you can send at a discounted price. A comic directly to a prisoner. So that'll be an option for everyone, and it's sending five of them is part of the big package that you can get.
Okay. Cool. Oh, excellent. Okay, so yeah, so everyone listening, you don't have to memorize any of this. This will be on our website, thequeerarabs.com. And you can follow us on the Queer Arabs on Instagram and X and Facebook. And then
Should we get on Blue Sky?
yeah, do you recommend Blue Sky, Bijan?
I do specifically like for I think it'll probably eventually get saturated to the point where big corporations will start coming after it.
Yeah.
But right now, there are no big corporations on there. There are no like corporate accounts.
Oh.
Celebrities use it very little. And there are huge block lists. I love this. When you block someone, they don't know that you've blocked them. And they can't see anything that you've posted. They can't see your profile even. And they have lists that you can subscribe to that people have compiled of known problem people.
Oh, that's
And
great
they're
for
and
safety. Yeah.
yeah. So like so you can just go to a to the block list and you can and there'll be like, you know, known Nazis, you know, known people who do this, known people who do that, and then you
Yeah.
can just block them en masse.
Our podcast account probably will need that. As it
I
kind,
certainly do.
yeah, definitely would have been useful on what is now known as X.
Although we get a surprisingly small volume of hate.
Yeah,
I'm always
it was
surprised
more in the
by like why don't
beginning.
people hate us more.
Yeah, more in the
But I
beginning
guess
there were a lot of haters, but
yeah.
they've gotten bored of us,
Yeah,
thankfully.
it moves on. But yeah, I'm always like reluctant to get on a new platform, but this sounds like
I
it
think you
might
should
be
get on
a
there
good choice.
next.
Yeah.
I mean, I the way I see it, you know, get in while the getting's good and get out before it gets too bad, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we should put the podcast on there. Awesome. And if anyone wants to follow you individually, do you have your own accounts, or do you want to, or should people just follow you
Well,
directly?
we tried running Jamshed Studio official accounts, and we just it didn't really get any traction.
Okay.
My Blue Sky account's all right. Just at bijan.bluesky.app. So if you search for Bijan, Bijahan, I'm the only one that comes up. So.
Okay. I feel like this crowd will be a good one, but at least if there are any trolls, we know there's some good safety features.
Yeah, they started calling it block culture.
Block culture.
The yeah, the trolls started trying to call it that as like a derogatory thing, but we just embraced it. We're like, yeah, we're all about
Yeah.
block culture
It's like
here.
cancel culture, but we block
Yeah,
party.
it's like specific blue sky cancel culture. I love
except
it.
instead of worrying about canceling you, they just ignore you entirely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's incredible. I love that. Yeah. Okay. This is the first time I felt like compelled to get on Blue Sky. So I think it'll be
Should consider, yeah.
a good spot for the podcast next. Well,
Well,
thank
follow
you.
me.
Yeah, definitely gonna follow you. You'll be the first one we follow. But yeah, thanks so much for coming on again. It was really good to talk again. I'm excited for the new comic.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I'm so glad to be here. I had a great time.
Me too. Thanks everyone for listening.